All right. Good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So first of all, welcome back. We've had a long hiatus from this year. I apologize. Much of it, all of it, was just simply scheduling. But Emir Tzah Hashem, tonight is the beginning, and we'll be continuing Emir Tzah Hashem going forward until the couple of weeks that we're not going to be going forward. But no, Emir Tzah, next couple of weeks, we'll be back on the topic of the parsha. And it's a really wonderful and exciting parsha to start with, Parshas Yisro. So of course, again, when we speak about Parshas Yisro, so the part of the parsha that usually gets the most dramatic coverage is the Aseres HaDibros, the Ten Commandments. And of course, not just the Ten Commandments, but it's the entire story of the revelation at Har Sinai, the entire episode of Matan Torah. But I actually want to draw your attention to something that at first glance appears to be relatively unexciting, but as we're going to see, really has an incredible, incredible component to it. And that's the opening part of the parsha. Number one, Vayishma Yisro. There are still sheets? Okay, there's sheets in the back. Okay, perfect. So Vayishma Yisro, Kohen Midyan Chosein Moshe, Eis Kol Asher Asa Elokim Moshe LeYisrael Amo. Yisro, the Kohen of Midyan, the high priest of Midyan, the father-in-law of Moshe, heard all that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had done for Moshe and for Israel, his nation, Ki otzi Hashem es Yisrael mimitzrayim. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu had taken Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. And remember again, the parsha then goes on to explain that Yisrael decides to leave the comfort of Midyan and joins the ranks of the Jewish people. So Rashi HaKadosh points out, number two, Vayishma Yisrael, Mashmua Shama Uba. What is it that Yisro heard that made him feel, that compelled him to come join Klal Yisrael? Kriyas Yamsuf u'Milchames Amalek. Literally, he heard about the splitting of the sea, as well as the war with Amalek. Remember again, the war with Amalek, splitting of the sea we all know about. War with Amalek represents, is speaking about the war with Amalek, that at the end of Parashas Beshalach, after leaving Mitzrayim, and after such a miraculous display of divine might, Amalek has the chutzpah to start up with Klal Yisrael. Now, of course, again, the good news was that Baruch Hashem, we were able to vanquish our enemies during that battle. But that was a significant battle because that represented the first time that a foreign nation started up with the Jewish people after leaving Egypt. Now, Rashi in number 2 is actually quoting a shortened version of the Gemara number 3. So the Gemara Masechet Zvachim writes, number 3, Kitanoi, Vayishma Yisron Kohen Midyan, Mashmua Shama Uba V'Nisgayer. What is it that Yisro heard that made him want to join the ranks of the Jewish people? And the Gemara adds in the piece over here, V'Nisgayer, and to convert. Meaning, this in and of itself is not our topic for today, but it's quite an interesting discussion about Yisro's spiritual journey. And the Gemara understands over here that Yisro actually converted. Whatever that means of conversion, whether it means he became Jewish, or whether it means that he simply rejected idolatry and became a monotheist. But somehow he joined religiously the ranks of Klal Yisrael. So Gemara is trying to figure out, what is it, like, what's the event that Yisro heard that made him want to join Klal Yisrael? So a three-way dispute, a three-way machlokis. Rabbi Shur Mishua says, Milchemes Amalek. He heard about the war with Amalek. That caused him to come and want to join. Sheharik, Sibit, Yidov, skip to the next piece. Rebbe Lazar Hamodi, Omer, Matan Torah. Now here's what's interesting. Not our topic for today, but perhaps one of the most important disputes that exists among the commentaries in the Torah is the concept of Ein Muktam U'Mu'uchar Batorah. Does the Torah follow a chronological sequence or not? So this is subject to much dispute. So there are many opinions that hold that the Torah does not follow any type of chronological sequence. There should be sheets right in the back. That the Torah does not follow a chronological sequence. Which means, again, that just because things are listed a certain way in the Torah does not mean the story unfolded. So, for example, when you look at the parashos of the Torah, so the beginning of Yisro has Yisro joining Klal Yisro, and Sinaitic revelation takes place later on in the parasha. Rabbi Lazar HaModi'i says that that's not chronologically the way that it happened. First, there was Sinaitic revelation, there was Matan Torah, and then after Matan Torah, Yisro heard about Matan Torah, and then he decided to join the ranks of the Jewish people. So a three-way dispute about what was it that caused Yisro to join the ranks of Klal Yisro. Rabbi Yoshua says the war with Amalek, so Rabbi Lazar Hamodi says Matan Torah, and of course Rabbi Lazar says last line, Kriyas Yamsuf. He heard about the splitting of the sea, that caused him to join the ranks of Klal Yisro. And Rashi quotes a shortened version number 2. So what I'd like to draw your attention to tonight is obviously what's driving the Gemara is the following. Whenever you whenever you see relatively happy, normal, stable people, which you don't find too many of those, but right, normal, happy, stable people make dramatic life changes, it generally means that what? That maybe they're not stable. I was going to say so, that there's something going on, right? There's something, because generally happy, normal, stable people don't usually make dramatic change. Now, I want to be clear. That doesn't mean that people who make dramatic change are not normal, unstable people, right? But what it generally means is human nature is most of us don't like to rock the boat. That's the way most people, now that's a very unfortunate reality, because that leads to many people simply coasting through life in compromised circumstances, but simply lacking the courage to do anything about it. So what the Gemara is pointing out over here is, what's happening? Yisro is a successful guy, right? Yisro, again, is wealthy. Yisro is well known. It's true, he has some theological challenges because it appears that he rejected the idolatry of Midian, but what is it that's causing him to uproot, to leave his home? Now, again, remember, Yisro does go back to Midian at some point later on, but for now, Yisro is totally disrupting any semblance of normal life. What is it that's... Yisro, what's happening at home? Right? What's going on, Yisro? What's wrong? What's the problem? Why are you leaving Midian? Why are you leaving the life that you know? Why are you going to join this fledgling nation? So, I want to share with you tonight three different approaches. And we're going to see, really, they're independent approaches. As I often tell you, one's not more correct. They're all correct. And we're going to see they each paint a little bit of a different portrait of Yisro. So take a look at number four. This is an amazing Kli Yakar. And I put a little bit of a biography of the Kli Yakar. You could see on the second page of Shlomo Ephraim ben Aaron Lunshitz. So you could see, again, 1609. I'm sorry, 1540 to 1609 from Lezhensk, Poland. So the Kli Yakar says the following, and this is going to blow you away. Look what he writes. For Aleph, Vayishma Yisro Kohen Midyan Chosei Moshe. Lichora Nira, She Yisro Shama HaKol. So the Kli Yakar says, you know, the Gemara is disputing what did Yisro hear that made him want to join the ranks of the Jewish people. So the Kli Yakar says he heard everything. He heard everything, meaning he heard about all. He heard about the war with Amalek. He heard about the splitting of the sea. He heard about Matan Torah. He heard it all. Ach she'ikir machlokosam, eizdo shmua garmalo, lovo im ishto ubanov shel Moshe. So the Kli Yakar says, the question here is not what propelled Yisro to travel from Midian and to join the ranks of the Jewish people. What's the question here? The question here is, why is Yisro taking Tzipora and Moshe's two sons with him? Because remember, if you look at number 5 for just a moment, so look at number 5, the pasuk says, remember, 5 is a continuation of 1. So number 5, Vayikach Yisro Chosi Moshe Sipora Eshes Moshe Achar Shiluchah. So remember, the Torah says, not only did Yisro go to Moshe, but Yisro took Tzipora also. After Moshe sent her away, now remember again, Rashi points out, when did Moshe send Tzipora away? So Rashi quotes the Medrash that says that Moshe, I remember, was bringing his whole family down to Egypt. He's nearing Egypt. Who comes out to meet him? His brother Aaron. And Aaron says to Moshe, who are these people? To which Moshe Rabbeinu responds, oh, Tzipora, Aaron. Aaron, Tzipora, right? Boys, meet your uncle Aaron. And what does Aaron say? It wasn't a very warm homecoming. What does Aaron say? Aaron says, what the heck are you thinking? That's not a direct quote. But you understand, right? Right? What are you doing? We're trying to get the people out of Egypt. Why are you bringing your wife and children with you to Egypt? At that point in time, Moshe says to Aaron, you're right. And he says Tzipora and the two boys back to her father, back to his father, back to Midian. So remember, Moshe has not seen his wife and his children already for a while, at least a year. At least a year, if not more. Because remember, again, the plagues, according to most opinions, took about a year. So at least a year they have not seen each other. Really, it's more than a year. So it means Tzipora and the boys were not there for the Makos. They weren't there for the plagues. They weren't there for the splitting of the sea. They weren't there for any of this stuff. The Kli Yakar is saying the question that really should drive us here is not why is Yisro joining, but why does Yisro feel at this point in time that he should bring Tzipora and the boys. Why is the reunification of the family happening now? Look at back to four for numbers for just a moment. Second to last line. See, hear this? Hear what the Kli Yakar says? Kli Yakar says the question is not on Yisro. Why Yisro joined? You know, there are some people that are just spiritual seekers. So spiritual seekers will seek out spirituality wherever it can be found. Yisro is a seeker. We call it today, you know, in today's jargon, we call Yisro a mavakish. Yisro is a seeker. Yisro is someone who wants more. So the fact that Yisro is going to join the Jewish people, totally get that. But why? What happened now, at this moment, that Yisro has to bring Tzipora and the boys back to Moshe? So look what the Kli Yakar does in number 6. So the Kli Yakar understands that each of the opinions quoted from the Gemara in number 3, each represent a different reason why Yisro felt the reunification of the family had to happen now. So look what he writes, 6 bays. Rabbi Yeshua Melchama Samalek Shama, Ki Amar, Hashem Shiyyeh Melchama Bamalek Midor Dar, V'Yisro Hayadar Bein HaAmalek, Yishine Amar, Bayomer Shalke. So let me tell you this first part outside. So remember, Rabbi Yeshua said, what was it that Yisro heard that made him come to join Moshe and to bring the family back now? To war with Amalek. So the first approach of Rabbi Elazar Modi is a very practical one. Yisro understood that Amalek was the arch enemy of the Jewish people, and therefore what? It would only be a matter of time until Amalek started up again. What was Yisro concerned about? Yisro was concerned that if Tzipora and the sons are with him, that means Moshe Rabbeinu's family is living with him in Midian, which makes him what? Which makes Yisro what? A target, right? Responsible for their safety and a target for Amalek. Therefore, according to the first approach, Rabbi Yoshua says, that Yisro says, look, you know what, Tzipora, I love you, you're my daughter, but you're a married lady. You got to go to your husband. You're not his problem, but you're his responsibility. I can't be a vulnerable target with Amalek. Therefore, again, he decides after hearing about the war with Amalek, I don't want to be the target. I'm looking for a life of peace. Tzipora, boys, it's time to go back. Join your husband, join your father. Look at paragraph Gimel. Rabbi Elazar Hamodi Omer Matan Torah Shama Uba. Listen to this. This is amazing. So remember, Elazar Hamodi says that Yisro heard about Matan Torah. He heard about Sinaitic revelation. Shene'emar sham al tikshu el isha. Remember, again, one of the commandments that the Jewish people were given in preparation for our Sinai is that husbands and wives were not permitted to be intimate with each other. V'chashav Yisro, for 3 days prior to Sinaitic revelation. V'chashav Yisro lidrosh osaka v'chomer shadarash Moshe. Umay Yisrael shalafi sha'a kiblu es ha-Torah perishu min ha-Isha, kol shekein Moshe sha'ashchina min ha-beres imo kol sha'a, sheyihye parush mi ishto mi kol v'kol, v'lo yishlach od achareha. Al, just tell me, you want our line, al kein, ba Yisrael vehevi le-Moshe's ishto, kidei she-tidor etzlo kitif eres adam la-sheves bayis. Listen to this, says the Kli Yakar, something amazing. Yisrael is a smart man. And he realizes that what? He realizes in preparation for Har Sinai, meaning to hear the Shechina requires some level of physical abstinence. So husbands and wives had to separate. Moshe Rabbeinu is going to have a lifetime of speaking directly to God. So practically, what is that going to mean for Moshe Rabbeinu? It's going to mean a lifetime of abstinence. Therefore, again, Yisro says to himself, my gosh, if I don't get my daughter back to him quickly, he may actually forget what it's like to be a married man, what it's like to live with a wife, what it's like to have a normative home, and he may be okay with this lifetime of abstinence. Yisro isn't concerned about the intimacy piece. He's concerned over here just about the lifestyle piece. He's concerned that he knows that Moshe Rabbeinu has been marked for greatness, and that greatness is going to have to come with familial sacrifice. So Yisro hears that in preparation for Har Sinai, all the husbands and wives separated, and he knows that Moshe Rabbeinu was going to have an ongoing Sinaitic type of revelation experience, and therefore Yisro is concerned that if I don't get them back together, they've been apart for a year already. Could be that perhaps that love, that relationship perhaps is not as intense as it once was. Yisro, you understand what Yisro is doing? Yisro's playing marriage therapist, right? And Yisro's saying, if I don't get them back together again now, it could be that the window will close and the marriage will never have the opportunity to really restart or to rehabilitate itself. Along those same lines, take a look at paragraph Dalit. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Kriyas Yamsuf Sha'moba. So listen to this. So the third opinion of the Gemara was, Rabbi Elazar HaMudiyu said that Yisro heard about the splitting of the sea. And because he heard about the splitting of the sea, he decided to bring the family, to bring Tzipora and the boys. Listen to this. Ki hu sover, shemosha shilcha beget peturin, ki demasik biyalkut beparashazu. Now, there's a very dramatic medrash. We actually spoke about this medrash probably about 5 or 6 years ago. You remember. Good. Right. So if you remember again, this incredible medrash that says that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't simply go ahead and send Tzipora back to Midian when he was going down to Egypt. He divorced her. That Moshe and Tzipora divorced. For the simple reason, not out of a lack of love, Moshe Rabbeinu already had an inkling that he was being conscripted for a life of service. And that life of service was going to be all-encompassing to the point that he would have no ability to function as a father or to function as a husband. And therefore, the Medrash is actually quite a dramatic Medrash. The Medrash actually speaks about the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu, professing his love for Tzipora, tells her, you're a young woman. You're a young woman. You have the opportunity to restart your life. If you remain tethered to me, I will never be able to give you what you deserve. You deserve an attentive husband, the children deserve an attentive father, and I will never be that person. And Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't saying that because he lacked the ability to be a father, to be a husband, just the opposite. But Moshe Rabbeinu understood that he was a father for Klal Yisrael. And sometimes the incredible irony is that when you're a father for Klal Yisrael, the people sometimes you don't have the ability to be a father for are who? Are your own children. So Moshe Rabbeinu says the Kli Yarkon according to the Medrash, Moshe Rabbeinu divorced Tzipora. He divorced her. He sent her back. He sent her back to Midian with a get peturin. Now watch this. V'chazal amru, get ready for this. V'kasha l'zavgun k'kriyas yamsuf. Remember again, the famous Gemara Maseches Sota, it's quoted by almost every single Sheva Brachas, Arvart, Alechayim, that's what? That it's harder to make one Shidduch for HaKadosh Baruch, it's as hard to make one Shidduch as it is to split the sea. Now, the truth is, that Gemara is often misquoted, because people actually don't quote the end of the Gemara. Because the end of the Gemara is, Ze Bezivug Sheni. The Gemara says that the comparison of making a Shidduch to the splitting of the sea is a second marriage, not a first. The Gemara actually explains that one's first marriage, that's bashert, right? The Gemara says that for your first marriage, that's where, again, before a person is born, arboim yom kodim yitziras avlad, bas kol yotzeis v'omeres bas ploni laploni. So first marriage, again, that's divinely ordained. That's decreed. Even before I'm born, a voice came out from heaven that said, I'm going to marry so-and-so, so-and-so. That's decreed. The second, sometimes the first marriage doesn't work out for whatever the reason, which is an interesting hashkafic discussion about how something that is divinely ordained doesn't work out, which, of course, is not such a chiddush, because God could want whatever He wants. If people don't want it, ain't going to happen. So God could say this might be correct, but again, if people don't want it or people can't have it for a variety of different reasons, okay, there's a zivug sheni. There's a second opportunity. Gemara says that creating a second marriage is as hard for HaKadosh Baruch Hu as what? As the splitting of the sea. Now, that metaphor has many different ideas, but the simple idea is that often, again, you have two different people who are in two different situations in life, and through a whole confluence of events, they're able to come together. So the Gemara says something amazing. U'kafir anira, shezivug sheni, zehainu hamachzir grushaso. So we often think of a second marriage as what? As what? As two people who were previously married to other people, then for whatever reason those marriages didn't work out, then those two people come together. The Gemara says there's another possibility of a second marriage, which is what? A man and woman who were married, divorced, and then decided to remarry. It's what we call machzir grushaso. So yeah, just hold on to this, a little bit of a wild ride. Ulefisha perut vezivuk zedomule perut vezivuk shalmeayam. Kimitila hayu hamayim michubarim chibor tivi. Vikasher avar aleim ruach kinas Hashem litein rebach ben advekim. Meaz kashel chabram. Viafal pikein. Ra'aki kasher rots Hashem michiburim shenis. Ala zivugam yafa. Kach chashav yisro shekemo shekemayim apanel apanim. Kein leipa adam laadam. So watch this. Says Yisro something amazing. So you look at the sea, and what happened? The sea is one entity. It's one combined entity. And then what happened? HaKadosh Baruch Hu went ahead and split it. And split it. So what happens? Now it becomes two disjointed entities. So when a person was looking at the sea, says the Kli Yakar, a person thinks to themselves, the one thing that's amazing, miraculous, there's no way these two independent parts could ever come back together to form a whole. But what happened by Kriyas Yamsuf? The two independent parts that looked like two solitary bodies of water, then what? Then came back together and formed one cohesive body of water. Says Yisro, if two independent bodies of water could come together to form a cohesive body of water, then perhaps there's still hope for my daughter and Moshe Rabbeinu as well. V'hinei ro'a Yisro, sha'achar shilucha shepatra Moshe beget, nispato hazivog, v'chibor hativi kimi ishluka hachazos. So remember, when Moshe Rabbeinu divorced Tzipora, they were two separate entities. Two separate entities, totally independent. And therefore again, when Tzipora comes back to Midian, so Yisro makes the automatic assumption that what? Can't be fixed. Can't be fixed. They tried. And again, this really was a case of extenuating circumstances. They tried. Extenuating circumstances. They're divorced. There's no possible path for reconciliation. And what happens? Get ready for this. V'kasher shama inyan kriyas yamsuf. Sha'achar pirudam shabole isanam. Kila lo nifridu me'olam. But when Yisro heard that the two independent split bodies of water, then in fact combined again and became one cohesive unit. Az ra'a sheyesh tikva el azivug hasheni. Sheyizav guya ala yafa. What did Yisro see? That sometimes it is possible for something that was one that became two, to once again become one again. It's possible, maybe not probable, maybe not what happens most of the time, but it's possible. And when Yisro saw this, he said, "Kimo shebekriyas yamsuf, efshari gach efshari, kimo bekriyas yamsuf efshari, kach efshari lezavgon." Yisro gets chizuk to repair the marriage of his daughter and his son-in-law when he hears about the sea. If one entity that was a cohesive entity, the sea, that was split into two, that could then come back and form one cohesive entity again, therefore again, perhaps there's hope for their marriage as well. Al-kin lakach es tzipora bito uba v'zeh perish yakar. And the Kli Yakar says, this last one, this is really good. Right? This is really precious. So what's amazing over here, you see from the Kli Yakar something absolutely amazing, which is what? That this opening parshas, opening pasuk about Yisro coming to join Klal Yisrael is so much deeper than just an example of Yisro's spiritual seeking kite. Right? Yes, Yisro is a spiritual seeker. There's no question. But there's something profound that's happening here on the level of familial dynamics. Yisro is crushed because his daughter is unhappy. Why is his daughter unhappy? Because she married the man she wanted to marry. And now for reasons beyond both of their control, the marriage is just simply not what either of them thought it was going to be. And therefore, again, they've been separate. According to the first approach of Elazar Modi, they've been separate again because Yisro, because simply Moshe Rabbeinu had too much to do. He couldn't be devoted to a marriage and to children. And Yisro, when he hears ultimately again about the fact that they separated, and he realized, before Matan Torah, and he realized that Moshe Rabbeinu was going to live a life of Sinaitic revelation, he realizes, if I don't bring my daughter back into his life quickly, the window is going to close forever. Second approach of Elazar, Rabbi Eliezer says, that Yisro gets chizuk from Kriyas Yamsuf, if the sea could split and come back together, then maybe Moshe and Tzipora, despite the traumatic split, could find a way to come back together as well. An incredible, incredible insight of the Kli Yakar about the entire journey of Yisrael to Klal Yisrael, to the camp of Israel, was really not for himself, or at least not totally for himself, but really was a last-ditch effort of a loving father to try to salvage the marriage of his daughter and to try to salvage the familial life for his grandsons as well. Incredible idea. Take a look at number 7, a second approach. This is from the Sefer Shemen HaTov, and he says very beautifully here, he says, V'li nira ba'ofen acher. Listen to how beautiful this is. And this is amazing because it speaks to such a real dynamic. It says, V'ger, af shemuchan lekabel Torah, mikomakom yore, delo yiskabel ki Yehudi shalim. So amazingly enough, so the Shemen HaTov writes, Every Baal Tshuva, and every Ger, every convert, even though they're ready to accept the entire Torah, there's always a fear. What's the fear? What's the concern? That I'm never going to be part of the club. That I'm never going to be part of the real collective of Klal Yisrael. Either because, again, I'm not an FFB, right? I'm not from birth. Or because, even more dramatic, I wasn't born Jewish at all, right? So I don't have the yichus, I don't have the family, I don't have the extended network. So I'm ready to take on all of the obligations. But you know what? I really feel like I'm just always going to be different and I'm never going to fully fit in. Ela yihye ke'en madrega shnia ukinoches darga. Perhaps I'm always going to be like a second-class citizen, like on a lower rung of everything. V'zehu gam chashasho shel Yisrael, du'ulai lo yiskabel lagamrei. And says the Shemen HaTov, this was Yisrael's concern as well. Yisrael's concern was, I want to join Klal Yisrael because I see the truth. Remember, I'm a seeker. I've spent my whole life trying to seek out the Ribbono Shel Olam, and I found him within Judaism. But I'm so concerned that am I ever really going to be accepted here? I'm a Midianite. I'm not a descendant of Amram Avinu. Not only that, but I was a practicing idolater. I was an idolatrous high priest. Am I ever going to be accepted? Aval kishera'a kriyas yamsuf, v'na'aseh ha'neis gam li'elu sherak esmol omru ha'mem li'en kvar mitzrayim, v'gam ilu sh'amru nop nipol yam kulam, omru b'yachad shira, v'lo haya hevdel ben Yehudi echad, Lesheni, ela kulam pe echad amru ashira lahashem ki ga'ol ga'ah. But when Yisro hears about the splitting of the sea, and something amazing happened, the splitting of the sea, what happened? Remember again, the night before the sea was split. So what were Klal Yisrael doing? What were our ancestors doing? Take a wild guess. Complaining. Right? Complaining. When in doubt about whatever we did over the 40 years, just complain. We were complaining. And what were we complaining? We were saying, what, Moshe? There's not enough graves in Egypt that you had to take us out here to die? They're complaining against Moshe. Literally, again, after seeing everything they saw, they're still complaining against Moshe Rabbeinu and doubting not just Moshe's abilities, but more importantly, or more dramatically, doubting HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And yet what? God goes ahead and splits the sea. God delivers them. God brings them through. And together with Moshe Rabbeinu, they all sing Shira. What's next? And furthermore, again, when there was the war against Amalek, so Moshe Rabbeinu says to Yeshua, choose for us people to go out and fight the war. Beirush Rashi, leave Allah, Hishvulo. Moshe Rabbeinu said, choose for us. In other words, we're all in the same boat together. Klal Yisrael, we're all one entity. Mikan Amru, Yehichavot Chavercha Chaviv Alav Kishalach. Imkein, Ra Yisrael, listen to this line, and this is so important. Shebechlal Yisrael, Hakol Shavim. What's the take-home message of Kriyas Yamsuf? What's the take-home message of Milchemes Amalek? We are all equal. The Ribono Shel Olam saved us all by the Yamsuf. Moshe Rabbeinu says to Yoshua, choose from among us people to go out and fight the war against Amalek. Us, Moshe Rabbeinu, what do you mean us? Who's us? That Moshe Rabbeinu said, I am no different than any other Jew. This is an incredible, incredible idea. That as much in Judaism, yes, you know, you have kings that come from Shevet Yehuda, and you have Kohanim and Levim that come from Shevet Levi. There are different roles. There are different roles. But there is no such thing as differentiating levels of importance. Every single Jew is chashuv. Every single Jew is important. Every single Jew matters. There is no such thing as someone who is more important or someone who is less important. Yes, there may be someone who's a greater Talmud Chacham. There may be someone who's more pious. There may be someone who's more holy. Those definitely possible. But in terms of relative importance of the individual, remember again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to us in the sixth parasha, Va'atem tiyuli mamleches konim v'goy kadosh. God speaks to all of us and he says, in my eyes, you are a nation of priests and a holy nation. God's not talking to the Kohanim. He's not talking to the Talmidei Chachamim. He's not talking to the Rabbanim. He's talking to all of Klal Yisrael. And he says, in my eyes, you are all equal. So Yisrael says the Shemana Tov something amazing. Yisrael, this whole time, you see, you think, we think, that the desire within Yisrael to join the ranks of Klal Yisrael began at the beginning of this week's parasha. It's not true. It started however long ago. So why didn't he go? Right? Remember again, so why didn't Yisro join them earlier on? And what's the answer? What's the answer? He was afraid. He was afraid. What was he afraid of? What most people are afraid of, which is why often we don't venture into new things, rejection. Rejection. He was afraid that he would come to Klal Yisrael, and Klal Yisrael would be very nice to him. Of course, Yisrael, we love you, we like you, but who's going to marry my kids, right? And where am I going to live? And who's going to give me a seat in shul? Because, hey, I'm not really one of the crowd. I'm a Midianite. I'm a former idolater. I'm a Baal Tshuva. I'm a Ger. So is anyone really ever going to accept me within the community of the Jewish people? But when he hears about the splitting of the sea, that was a miracle that was done for who? For who? For everyone. And when he hears about Milchemes Amalek, and what was the qualifications to go out to war? Because remember again, at the end of the day, we did not have a skilled army, right? We were out of Egypt for a whole what? For a whole, by Milchemes, 12 days, 2 weeks, 3 weeks at most. And we're going to battle against Amalek. And Moshe says, Yoshua, sent from among us. Moshe Rabbeinu speaks to us like we're his peers. Like we're buddies from us. Moshe and us, we're all in the same boat. Yisrael says, wow, look at these people. They treat everyone as equals. They treat everyone as a peer. They don't look down on others. They don't treat others with different backgrounds as different from them. But they respect and they give every single person the proper kavod and the proper derech eretz. Yisrael says, you know what? Once I see that or once I hear that, now I'm ready to join. The amazing thing. Now that I know that I don't have to fear rejection, now that I know that I don't have to fear being treated like a second-class citizen, now I'm really ready to join the ranks of Klal Yisrael. That's what's happening over here. It's not that he just hears about these events, but these events represent to him a sense of equality within the ranks of Klal Yisrael. Once there's the equality, then I'm ready to join. And finally, for our last approach for this evening, and then we'll bring everything together. So this is from a beautiful approach from the Ish Kodesh. The Ish Kodesh is a very, very important and holy sefer written by Rav Klonimus Kalman Shapira. Was the Rebbe Piazhetsna. So Rebbe Piazhetsna lived from 1889 to 1943. The Rebbe was in the Warsaw Ghetto. And every Shabbos in the Warsaw Ghetto, so he would deliver, almost every Shabbos, when they were able to, he would deliver a drasha on Shabbos. Deliver a drasha. Now, you have to understand what that means to deliver a drasha in the Warsaw Ghetto. See, speaking to a group of broken people, many of them, again, who had lost their entire family, lost everything in life. And the Rebbe's job on Shabbos was to somehow uplift their spirits. There are 3 years worth of drashas from 1940 to 1943. And what's amazing is how the tone of the drashas change as time goes on. In the beginning, in the 1940 drashas, the drushes are still filled with hope and optimism. We're going to survive this. We're going to get through this. By the time you get to the 1943 drushes, the Rebbe speaks often about the need to find the courage to die al Kiddush Hashem. It's an amazing shift. Still hope, still optimism that we'll come through this strong, but a little bit of a different focus. Maybe we're not going to survive this, but even if we don't survive this, we have the power to determine how, under what circumstances, we are able to leave this world. So this drasha was given on January 7th, 1940. And in fact, if you take a look in the top line there, he writes about Parshas Yisro. So he says, Yisro, look what he writes. B'Shabbos zeh ha'yisi behechave. This Shabbos, January 7th, 1940, we were in hiding. We were in hiding. So I don't know what was going on in the ghetto that Shabbos, but they couldn't assemble in the normal place. They were in hiding. Now, the Rebbe wrote down the drushes. After every Shabbos, he wrote down the drushes, and he hid them in a canister in the ghetto. The Rebbe did not survive the war. He was killed on a transport to Auschwitz. After the war, people went back and retrieved the canister, and that's the safe we have today, Ish Kodesh. An incredibly important safe. I believe it's translated in English as well. I think it's called Holy Fire. I don't know if it's an exact translation, but incredible, incredible thing. So listen to what the Rebbe writes over here. Paragraph A. Vayishma Yisro. Uperish Rashi. Mashmur Shama Uba. Kriya Samsuf Mechama Samalek. Vinodas HaKushya. Besivre Adoni Avi Mori Maran. He says, Ubishar Sfar Makedoshim. Masho Rashi Mashmur Shama Uba. Who are pasuk mefarish ki hotzi Hashem Yisrael Mitzrayim? The lama meishiv Rashi kriyas Yamsuf omachanas Amalek v'lo kimoshim mefurosh pasuk ki hotzi Hashem. Now the Piaget, the Rebbe, asks a different question. He says it's very strange. If you look back to Moment Number One, so what does the Torah say? Yisro the Kohen Midyan, father of Moshe, heard all that God did for Moshe and for Yisro, that God took the Jewish people out of Egypt. So then remember what happens. Rashi quotes the Gemara. The Gemara says, Mashmua Shama Uba. So now what did Yisro hear that made him want to join the ranks of Klal Yisrael? So the Piyajetna says, what kind of question is that? What do you mean, what did Yisro hear? What's the obvious answer? The Pasuk says that Hashem took Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. That's what he heard. God took us out of Egypt. Yisrael was awed by this reality. And therefore, again, he chooses to go ahead and he chooses to join the next class. So why does Rashi ask this question? Like, what did Yisrael hear that made him want to come? Pasuk is explicit in telling us. Turn the page. Paragraph B. Aval, listen to what he writes. Aval kabolas hator b'midbar haisa. Remember again, tying this into the end, to the middle of the parasha, Kabbalah, our Sinaitic revelation, took place in the desert. The Efshar, the Rami's. Now, you have to understand what the Rebbe is asking, what the Rebbe is discussing over here, is a major fundamental question that many of the Mefarshim asked, which is that if I were to ask you, if you were to script Kabbalah's HaTorah, so where would you say which should take place? Where? Eretz Yisrael. Right, Eretz Yisrael. I would think again that, you know, get to Eretz Yisrael, go up into the Har HaBayis, right? The place ultimately, again, where the Akedah took place, the future site of the Beis HaMikdash, that's a place for Matan Torah. But yet it takes place in the middle of the desert. By the way, the amazing, not only does it take place in the middle of the desert, but isn't it interesting how the site of the holiest event in our national existence is unknown, right? Isn't that amazing? Right? We know where Klal Yisrael crossed the Yam Suf. You could even go in Eretz Yisrael to the exact spot where Klal Yisrael crossed the Jordan River into Eretz Yisrael. You can literally go there. You could literally stand by the yard there where Klal Yisrael actually crossed over. But yet, where is Har Sinai? I don't know. I mean, some tour guides say they know, but the truth is, we don't really know. We know the general area, you know, the Sinai Desert, but we don't know which mountain it is. We don't even know if that mountain even exists anymore. And yet, again, it's the site of the holiest event in our national history. So look what the Rebbe writes. He says, V'ashal Rami is Laha, She'isa B'Sram HaKadosh, and Be'Saron, Al-Divrei Rashi, Shema Yisrael, Shelo Yihei Lipcha Chalak Al HaMakom. So now, let me give you a little bit of background on this. So the Rebbe quotes Rashi. Now, Rashi's actually discussing the Pasuk, V'ahavta as Hashem Elokecha, B'chol Levavecha. You have to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu with all of your heart. So Rashi, what does it mean to love God with all of your heart? Rashi uses the phrase, Shelo yehe libcha chaluk al hamakom, which literally means, the way we translate it, is that your heart should not be divided against God. What does that mean? You have to love God with all of your heart means that whatever hand God deals you in life, I still have to love Him. Meaning, it's easy to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu if everything goes my way. Of course, everybody's in love with God when God delivers blessing to my doorstep. That's no challenge. V'ahavtas Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavecha means even when life is not going my way, even when circumstances are exceptionally difficult, I realize that my circumstances are from God, and therefore, Ribono Shel Olam, if it's from you, I'm not saying I love the circumstances, but I love you. My love for you is not conditional on you giving me what I want. My love for you is unconditional. No matter what's happening, shelo yehi lipcha chalok al hamakom. But look what the Rebbe does with that. This is amazing. He says it could also be understood differently. Shelo yehi lipcha chalok al hamakom also means what? Never think. Never let your heart tell you that the service of God is dependent al hamakom, on any one place. What does that mean? Shelo tomar b'makom hazeh efshar la'avodas Hashem, u'b'makom hazeh I efshar li. Never say, I can only go ahead and serve God here, but not here. I'm a big Zionist. I love Eretz Yisrael. I'd be there tomorrow if I could. But a person is never allowed to say, you could only find God in Eretz Yisrael. Can't say that. It's not true. Is there a greater manifestation of the Ribono Shel Olam in Eretz Yisrael? Of course there is. But does that mean God is not in Baltimore? Does that mean there's no Kiddusha here? Does that mean you can't find the Ribono Shel Olam in Baltimore? Of course not. Wherever I am, as the famous Kotzker says, people ask, where is HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And the Rebbe of Kotzk said, wherever you choose to let him in. Wherever I choose to open my heart to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, wherever I am, that's where God is. Shelo yehi lipcha chalok al hamakom means, never think for a second that the presence of God in my life is dependent on certain geographic realities. Wherever I am, the Ribono Shel Olam is accessible to me there. Wherever I am, God is there too. Therefore, says the Rebbe, that's why, rak b'chol makom, tzrichim la'avod es Hashem. Therefore, wherever you are, you have to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's no geographic excuses for distance from God. Lachin, listen to this. This is a beautiful idea. Ilu kiblu Yisrael satora ba'artzam ba'aretz Yisrael, hayuchoshim sherak b'mkomam u'bebeisam efshar lahem lekayim osa, velo kishem bagola, u'mituradim, lachin nasan Hashem lahem ator b'midbar, baderech, v'tiltu, sheyedu shebechom makom tzrichim lekayma, kiniskela shla yilipcha chaluk ala makom. Look what the Rebbe says so beautifully. HaKadosh Baruch Hu purposely decides to go ahead and give us the Torah where? Where? In the mamish, the middle of nowhere. The desert, the middle of nowhere. By the way, desert is mamish, the middle of nowhere. The proof to that is, again, you know, I know where the Har HaBayis is. Why do we know where the Har HaBayis is? Why do I know where the Temple Mount is? Because it's in a habitated area. Because it's in the middle of Yerushalayim, Irak Kodesh. And Yerushalayim, from the times of Malki Tzedek, has always been an inhabited city. So wherever you have a place where people live, so the landmarks are always preserved. In the desert, no one lives, at least in a stable fashion, in the desert. So what happens? The address of Matan Torah has been lost in the sands of time. And says the Piagetzna, please understand, that is by design. Shelo yehi lipcha chalak ala makom. We dafka do not know the address of Matan Torah. Because had we known the address, I would think that Torah is tethered to that address, that spirituality is tethered to geography. Not the case. Spirituality is not tethered to anything. Where I am, spirituality is. Where I am, that's where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. Where I am, that's where I have my ability to connect. And says the Piagetzna, and it's such a beautiful interpretation, that's the meaning, Shelo yehi lipcha chalak al hamakom. Never think in your heart, that your ability to connect with God is dependent on your particular geographic presence. Wherever I am, that's where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is as well. Now watch this paragraph C. Lachim. So now that we've established that premise, that God gives the Torah in the middle of nowhere, to highlight the fact that what? Follow this. God gives the Torah in the middle of nowhere to highlight the fact that Torah and spirituality is everywhere. That's the message. So now that I know that message, paragraph C. L'chein efshar Rashi zal shol kazos al Yisro, mashmua shama uba. Says the Piagetzna, you know what Rashi's bothered by, what Rashi's real question is? Rashi's real question is, why did Yisro have to leave Midian in order to find God? Meaning, what did we just prove, just above? What did we just prove in the previous paragraph? That's what? That Kosh Baruch Hu is wherever you are. Right? Wherever I am, God's there as well. Wonderful. Yisro, you want the Ribbono Shel Olam? Absolutely no problem. The great part is, you don't even have to leave the comforts of home. You can stay in Midian and you can find God. Look what he says. Lama hutzrach lavo. Ki haya yachol lasheves b'veso. He could have stayed at home. B'lishloach lamosha v'neshi yishlach lo eze ish miyisrael. Shi gairu v'yelam du Torah. Shkimosha hu shav l'veso l'gayer b'nei mishpachto. So the PHS has to make a question. Yisro, why are you uprooting everyone? Why don't you send a telegram to Moshe Rabbeinu and say, listen, Moshe, I want to convert. Do me a favor. Send me a Rebbe. Send me a Rebbe, right? Can you just send me someone to teach Torah? To teach send me, let's open a Chabad house in Midian, right? We'll go ahead, we'll get this process started, and we can begin the Geirus like that. Why, what the PHS, Rashi is asking, Mashmur Shama Uba, if we accept the premise, Shloye Lipcha Chalak Alamokum, that God is everywhere, why does Yisrael feel compelled to leave the comforts of home and to join the ranks of the Jewish people? So watch this. So the Alzemetarus, remember, what does Rashi answer? Mashmur Shama Uba. Rashi's answer, the question is, why did Yisrael feel compelled to leave the comforts of home and to join Klal Yisrael? Why did he have to feel that he had to leave? So what does Rashi answer? Rashi says he heard about two things. Kriyas Yamsuf, O Milchamas Amalek. He heard about the splitting of the sea and the war with Amalek. What does that mean? Ki Amalek Ratzal Karara. Remember, what did Amalek want to do? See, Amalek is the antithesis of Klal Yisrael. Because we as a people, we stand for what we believe in more than anything is Hashkacha Pratis. So that's Hashkacha Pratis, divine providence, that God is involved in everything. That there is nothing in my life as an individual and as a nation that is too small for God's involvement. Ribbono Shel Olam is front and center in everything in my life. Amalek is the polar opposite of that. Asher Karcha, happenstance. Everything is by chance. Everything is fate. There's no such thing as providence. So Amalek was looking, so to speak, to cool down Klal Yisrael from the theological heat. He goes on, Ve'eich zeh, Sh'ala b'dayto, sh'yucha zos, achar kriyas yamsu, sh'rasa shivcha, aval Amalek chashav, kevan shehim b'derech, chas v'shalom yucha lahem, af shekvar hayu b'madriga gedola, v'zeh asher karcha b'derech. So what does Amalek figure? So ask the Piagetzna, but how could Amalek possibly think that they could overcome us after they heard about what happened at the sea? How could they ever contend with Klal Yisrael? And what's the answer? Because Amalek figured we're weak and we're compromised. Why are we weak and compromised? Because we are baderech. Because we're traveling. We don't have a homeland yet. We're not situated in our land. And therefore, by definition, that's our Achilles heel. The fact that we are baderech. The fact that we are on the road. The fact that ultimately, again, we are not settled. That's our Achilles heel. And therefore, Amalek felt that they could attack us and vanquish us. So of course, again, Amalek was wrong. Why was Amalek wrong? Because Amalek thought that the only time that the Jewish people are strong is when in our land. But in fact, they were wrong. They thought when we're baderech, we're weak. Because that's the normal teva of things. When people are not in their indigenous land, when you're on the desert, when you're in the middle of nowhere, of course you're going to be weak. Because again, people's identity, in most nations, their identity is only bolstered when they are in their national land. We also have an incredible connection to our land. We have a soulful connection. Like this, Rabbi Nachman wrote, L'chol mokom shani holech, ani holech l'Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Nachman said, every step I take in life is a step towards Eretz Yisrael. Even if it's in the direct opposite direction. My heart is always walking towards Eretz Yisrael. No matter where my body's going, we have that soulful connection. But you know what the power of the Jew? The power of the Jew is, I don't have to be in Eretz Yisrael. to be spiritually strong. I don't have to be in Eretz Yisrael to be connected to my God. I don't have to be in Eretz Yisrael to be on fire with my spirituality. Wherever I am, as long as my heart is open to the Ribono Shel Olam, He is going to be with me. So Amalek attacks us baderech, because they think that derech is the Achilles heel of Klal Yisrael. And what's the irony? Not only is baderech not the Achilles heel of Klal Yisrael, but what? It's actually our greatest source of strength. Shelo yehei lipcha chalok ala makom. Derech represents the ability that no matter where we are, no matter where we are situated, we don't depend on geography for connection. Even when we're in the middle of absolutely nowhere, we have the ability to connect with the Ribono Shel Olam. So what Amalek thought was the weakness that we were baderech, we were on the road, actually turns out to be the greatest theological strength of Klal Yisrael. That even when we are baderech, wherever we are, we're able to have that beautiful, passionate connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Look what he says. Therefore, Lachain Amar Yisrael, Im Kain Lo Dai Lekabel Asa Torah Bevesi Bilvad Ela Muchrach Ani Laleches Shama Ulekablo Baderech Gamkein. So look what Yisrael writes. Yisrael says, you know what? I got to get a piece of this action here. Because if their strength is baderech, I have to experience this. Because to feel a source of connection in my home, that I know I'll definitely be able to find. To feel a source, to feel a sense of Kadosh Baruch Hu in my home, in my geographic circumstances, that I know, of course I know I'll have that. But I want to experience what it feels like to be part of a nation, that wherever we are and whenever we are, we have the ability to connect with our Kadosh Baruch Hu. I want to feel that. Therefore, what does Yisro choose to do? Yisro chooses to leave the comforts of Midian, not because he has to leave Midian to find God, because God is as much as Midian as he is everywhere else in the world. But Yisro feels the need to leave Midian because he wants to experience that baderech dynamic. He wants to experience that dynamic that wherever I am, I could connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even if I am in unfamiliar or alien circumstances or geographic realities. He goes on, he says, Va'az ucha, paragraph D. Va'az ucha lios Yehudi gam bevesi. Hainu sha'al yidei sheshama. Sha'achar kriyasan sufaisim l'chamas amalek. Fine. So therefore the Piagetzna says something that I think is dramatically amazing. The Piagetzna says that the real kasha, so the Piagetzna teaches us the following. So let's bring this all together. So now, what we begin to see, and I hope you're feeling this. I know this is our first year back, so maybe I'm not being impactful enough. But again, you have to understand the beauty of this pasuk and the beauty of our Torah in general is that you take psukim that look so ordinary, and yet what? We taught things that are so exceptionally extraordinary. So here, okay, we all know the story. Yisro is leaving Midian to come to join Klal Yisrael. The tension is what? The tension is why? What's going on? So you're a good guy. You're a believer. You could be from in Midian also. You'll find nine other guys. You'll make a minion. You'll be fine. Young Israel and Midian will open its doors. Why are you doing something so abnormal, like disrupting the entirety, the balance of your life, and joining a fledgling people in the desert? What's happening? So we come out tonight with three different approaches. The Kliyakar's approach, you know why Yisroel feels the need to uproot his life? It's not for him. Yisroel could easily find God in Midian as well. So why is he uprooting his life? For who? For Tzipora and for his grandsons. Because he feels that the clock is ticking. If this marriage is ever going to be repaired, if Tzipora and Moshe are ever going to be brought back together in a marital union, now is the time. If I don't do it now, I fear that my daughter and her husband will be forever separate, that those boys will forever grow up without a father in their lives. If I don't act now, that window will quickly close. Approach number two, the Shemana Tov, what is it that pushes Yisro to go? And this is amazing. The Shemana Tov is giving us a psychological insight into Yisro. Yisro has wanted to join for such a long time, but didn't. Why? Because of a fear of rejection. Not because Jews aren't nice people, but because human nature is we tend to reject that which is not like us. And so Yisrael figures, you know what? I'm a Baal Tshuva. I'm a Ger. I'm never going to find acceptance within the ranks of Klal Yisrael. But then when he sees that all Jews are beloved by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, by Kriyas Yamsuf, when he sees that even Moshe Rabbeinu looks at the common Jew as an equal, as a peer, Yisrael realizes, I don't have to fear rejection. I could join the ranks of Klal Yisrael. I could be one of them. And finally, approach number three, the Ish Kodesh, the Rebbe Piyajetzna, something profound is unfolding over here. That Yisrael never really felt the need beforehand to get up and to leave his home. I'm sorry, let me say it differently. According to the Piyajetzna, Rashi's bothered by not as much why Yisrael felt compelled to join Klal Yisrael, that we understand, but why did he feel the need to leave his home and join Klal Yisrael? All this time Yisrael has already been a practicing monotheist, and he did so perfectly from the comforts of home. Why the need to leave the comforts of Minyan and to join the Jews in the desert? And the Piyajetzna advances what I think is really a life-altering idea. The Piyajetzna says, Shlo ye lipcha chalak al hamakom, which means, number one, I have to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu no matter what hand he deals me in life. Can't just love God when things go my way. I have to love him unconditionally. But furthermore, Shlo ye lipcha chalak al hamakom, understand that spirituality is not tied to geography. God is everywhere. God is everywhere. But the koach, and that therein lies the koach of Klal Yisrael. You know, we as a people, we're privileged to be members of Klal Yisrael. It's not always the easiest thing to be Jewish, but most things in life that are meaningful and good are never easy. The greatest privilege in life is to be a Jew. There is nothing better. It's even better than winning the Powerball. Right? You do. Every day that you're Jewish, you win the spiritual Powerball. It's an incredible privilege. And what's the greatest privilege? The greatest privilege is that I can have a connection with the King of Kings any moment I want, wherever I want. It doesn't matter where I am. If I want it, that relationship is mine to have. Yisro sees this and Yisro says to himself, I want to experience that. For me to feel God in the comforts of home, I get that, I understand. But I want to be in the middle of nowhere. And I want to feel what it means like to be connected with HaKadosh Baruch Hu even in the midst of alien, unfriendly circumstances. I want to know what it really means to find HaKadosh Baruch Hu baderech. I want to feel what it means. I want to feel just as Torah is not tethered to any particular mountain. I want to feel that my relationship with God goes with me anywhere and everywhere. And that's what compelled Yisro to leave the comforts of Midyan and to join the ranks of Klal Yisro. And of course, the lesson for us is an incredible one as well. Shelo ye lipcha chalak al hamakom. You know, lesson of course number one is that wherever we are, we always have an opportunity to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know, sometimes we think that our relationship with God is dependent on certain realities. Right? If only I was in Eretz Yisrael. Of course, when you're in Israel, everybody feels more connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the holiness of the land. But it's not just there so that you can have a connection wherever I am. But sometimes the makom is not just a geographic place. Sometimes it's a life circumstance. If only I had a better job. If only I had more money. If only I had better shalom bias. Whatever it is, fill in the blank, all the things that we need in life. If only I had those things, then I could have a better relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Whatever your circumstances are, we all have different circumstances, often ones that we do not choose. But we have an opportunity to have a relationship with God wherever we are. That's lesson number one. And lesson number two is how important it is to take the values of our Yiddishkeit with us wherever we go in life. There are circumstances that are hostile to our ideas and to our ideals. Whether sometimes people run into it in a workplace, people run into it with relationships, and we have to realize is that yes, sometimes we have to figure out how to adapt our circumstances to adjust to our religious needs, not adjust our religious needs to adapt to our circumstances. It's very important. But no matter where I am in life, no matter what I'm doing, understand that I have the ability to have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shelo ye lipcha chalak al hamakom. Whether my geographic circumstances, my personal circumstances, that relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam, something that is open and is accessible to all of us. So we should be zocher that the same way that Yisro found the courage to be able to live this lesson, he went to baderech to be able to create a relationship with God that will last no matter what the circumstances. We should be zocher miyaretz Hashem, no matter what our life circumstances are, whether they're good or they could be better or they're exceptionally difficult, whether we're in the geographic place we want to be or we're not, we should realize that we have the great gift of having a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, no matter what derech we may find ourselves upon. All right, stop over here. Eretz Hashem will pick up next week with Parshas Mishpat. Thank you all. You know, that would be great.